你老实话俾我听样嘢，你出边系咪有个女人啊？
黐线噶你，边个同你讲啊？
你唔好理啊！你系咪有个女人啊？
冇啊。
你唔好讲大话啦！你望实我，你望实我。我问你，你出边系咪有个女人啊？
系。你唔系咁啊嘛？佢兜口兜面同你讲话，出边有个女人喎。你打得咁細力嘅？
我冇預佢咁快答我，我唔知點反應。
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Retro Movie Podcast, the podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my co-host, friend, and the person most likely to write a drunken master into his martial arts manga with zero setup, Alex Perkins. Burke, how are you doing tonight?
I'm well, thanks. And yeah, I love drunken masters. My favorite fight in Naruto is drunk Rock Lee.
Thank you. That is one I agree. It's like I don't love Naruto, but that's one of the better fights.
I didn't actually get far enough into the series to get to the good fights though.
So. No, you got there. That in my opinion, that's one of the, if not the best fight in the series.
I think, sorry to digress immediately. But the Rock Lee Gaara fight too in the like what the bracket or whatever is pretty awesome.
Yeah. I mean Rock Lee is just one of the best characters and they just throw him to the side and Shippuden and you're like, okay, well that sucks. But my issue is not with the drunken master, it's that you didn't have any setup. It's like you gotta at least drop in like in chapter one, like, oh, my old master so and so. You know, you can't just throw it into the story out of nowhere, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But in other news on this week's Naruto podcast.
There we go. Welcome back to the show, everyone. This is the podcast where every week Perk and I review a movie connected to the last one we watched. If you like our show, we post on pretty much every Friday. We try our best.
We do our best.
A week or two. But if you like it, tell your friends about it and come and watch the movies with us. We are finishing up kind of, I'll explain more later. We're kind of finishing up our Chinese movie string. We're doing kind of chunks of five. With a movie called In the Mood for Love. Our connection from last week's movie, Chungking Express, previously was Tony Leung Chiu-Wai, but we're going to save him for next week. And instead, we're switching our connection to Wong Kar-wai, who I honestly did not realize was the same director until like after I had picked the movie. So that was a nice surprise. But yeah, Perk, why don't you intro for us?
Yeah, all right. As you mentioned, In the Mood for Love is a 2000 joint directed by Wong Kar-wai, starring Maggie Cheung and I suck with these pronunciations and I'm not doing it justice. Tony Leung Chiu-Wai, who's like my favorite Chinese actor now, so I should probably learn how to pronounce his name. The story of the movie is there are two couples who live next door. Each of them has a spouse who's cheating, and so the other two form a bond, a platonic bond, and it develops into something more.
Or does it?
Well, let's find out.
Let's find out.
couple of fun facts. Wong Kar-wai was filming and editing the final scene a week before the film debuted at Cannes.
Jesus Christ. Cool. This dude is wild. This director is absolutely wild.
No, I got another one for you, too. They were filming in Beijing, but moved the production to Macau because the Chinese government demanded a finished script, and Wong Kar-wai doesn't use scripts.
No, he just writes it as he goes, which
is
insane.
He moved the whole production instead of writing a script. And then Maggie Cheung, whose hair and makeup took 5 hours every day.
Oh my god, I believe it though. She looked gorgeous.
Had 46 different dresses for this movie. Not all of them made it into the movie, but like she has a different dress in every scene.
Hell yeah, she does. Yeah, one other fun fact. So after I watched this, you know, all of our phones that are listening to us, right? So I got a YouTube recommendation. You know, there's videos, I think it's like GQ or a few channels do them, where it's like they bring on an actor and they go through this filmography of like their biggest characters, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
There's one with Tony Leung Chiu Wai. I was like, oh,
is
shit.
That really?
Yeah, from like a year ago.
I'm in
like,
English? Fuck yeah. So,
he's speaking Chinese, but they have subtitles. Okay. Or I guess I'm not sure which version of Chinese he's speaking. But he said that there's actually a different ending to this movie that originally that I'll spoil it. But I mean, you're listening to this, or spoilers already. The original ending was that both characters killed themselves. And I'm not sure why they changed it, but he's like, I like this ending better because it has more kind of regret and heartbreak and not just like the characters dying, which I agree with. I much preferred this to the alternative, but check out that video if you're interested.
To collab with that fact, the story is based on a short story where that is the ending.
Okay, gotcha. That makes sense.
So that's what the source material is, and yeah, I'm very glad they didn't do that because there's like a melancholy around the ending of this movie, which is very beautiful, and it would have just been sad if it were that way.
Yeah, I agree. And also, just one other quick thing before we jump into it here. A fun fact I learned about Chungking Express from that interview is we talked about that Wong Kar-wai was like writing the scenes every day, like before he shot them. And he called Tony like halfway into production, like they already were shooting like the first half, you know, with like the first story. He's like, hey, come shoot this movie with me. And Tony's like, I got 2 weeks. And he's like, fine. So they shot all of his stuff in 2 weeks, and he came in halfway through the movie. And that's, you know, the two halves of the movie. Which is just, this director is like crazy, but he's like becoming one of my favorite directors
because
I fucking love how this movie is shot. It is incredible. But I'll go to you first, Perk. What did you think of In the Mood for Love?
It's a banger. It's so good. Oh my god. I was geeking the whole time. Like like from the start of the movie, I'm like, oh my god, really? Oh no, he's doing that? Oh, let's go.
Oh, we're never gonna see their spouses' faces?
That was it. I was like, yo, I love that as a decision. It's so cool and it works so well. I'm like, oh, are they they're never gonna show the spouse. That's so perfect because the movie starts based around two relationships, but right from the go, we know that it's not about either of the relationships that are foundational to the plot. It's about the intermingling.
Exactly, and there's such a great payoff to that. I'm just going to jump to it, which is in the rehearsal scene where they're rehearsing her confronting her husband about cheating on her. And it's shot where we just
over
see the back
shoulder.
Of the head.
Yep,
and we think she's actually talking to her husband. And then it's revealed that it's Mr. Chow, right? Mr. Chow. And it's like, oh, shit. And he's like, we're rehearsing. And then that reveal is just fucking great. And then you also get, like, them doing it again. And her kind of breaking down and crying. Which, like, I'm just going to say right now. I know you said that Tony is one of your new favorite Chinese actors. Maggie Cheung, for me, was the star of this movie. Like,
oh, definitely.
She absolutely killed it and like had the most realistic crying I've ever seen in a movie, I thought. And was just like incredible. But yeah, this movie is incredible. I can't get over how well it's shot. All the decisions are just incredible and the acting's phenomenal. I love how he doesn't hold your hand with any exposition. He's like, we're throwing you in, you'll figure it out. Like, and maybe you don't figure some things out. Like, it took me a hot minute to realize that her boss was having an affair and she was helping him manage that with like the two handbags and then
the
two people calling. And I was like, oh, this is like another, like, it's even more kind of fucked up that her husband's cheating on her and she's helping her boss like cheat. So yeah, it's incredible.
I'm gonna try to stay coherent and not just gush broadly, but let's start with the way it's shot and the direction. I agree. I am just astounded at Wong Kar-wai and his directorial style. I took notes, Jacob. I don't do that. You know that.
That's what I do.
I know, exactly. but the way that he shoots this film and the editing choices are just, they contribute so much to the ambiance of the whole film. For example, we got there's a lot of cigarette smoke, and there's a lot of hanging romantic tension in the air, and the cigarette smoke just kind of lingers in the air, symbolizing the romantic tension, and I love that. There are a lot of scenes that are shot through grates or like window bars, to emphasize that the characters are trapped. I thought, in particular, one scene, I thought it was a very cool subversion of that when Sue is at Mr. Chow's place, and the whole like neighborhood comes back and
she gets trapped in there.
She can't leave. That scene is just shot, just the two of them, just an open shot. And then when she is finally able to go back to her room, the shot of her in the room, it's a lingering shot of her through the window bars. Because, you know, it literally she's trapped in that room during the day, but she's with what's the character's name?
Mr. Chow.
Yeah. She's with Mr. Chow, so she's not really trapped. You know, they're there together. But once she's back on her own, alone in her room, now she's trapped. It's just,
yeah,
touches like that are so cool.
Yeah, that's great.
And then the editing. Sorry,
go for it. Keep going. Send it.
Some of the shots and the editing selections are very cool. I think when it's Chan, right? When Mrs. Chan goes to visit Mr. Chow at the hotel he's staying at, when she shows up, there's hyper fast jump cuts to different angles, and it's really frenetic. And I think it, you know, she's meeting him at a hotel, and she's probably really torn up inside and like emotionally torn. And so I think that the jump cuts kind of show what a frenetic state of mind she's in. And then I like also he does a lot of this. He did a bunch of this in Chongqing as well, but the utilization of a slower frame rate to almost draw out moments and add emphasis and just kind of make shots linger a little more.
Yeah.
Super cool.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, rant over.
And yeah, you mentioned like the we get these kind of quick shots of like items or objects or just like little things to kind of run. That's throughout the movie, and I really like that as kind of what characters might be looking at or what they care about. You know, like I remember after she is trapped in the room and she leaves her like little slippers in the room, and that's what he ends up bringing to Singapore, and then she comes back and kind of takes them back and stuff. Speaking of the neighbors, I love them as like also just kind of a side character and just like a side environment. And specifically like Miss Chan never really engaging with them or engaging in community, right? Like she never wants to eats with them and kind of always politely declines. It doesn't ever really hang out. She did when like her husband was around. Like I remember there's like a shot of her bringing him like a drink or a cigarette or something early in the movie. But it was just, I don't know. It was very relatable to me because I've been in some situations where for whatever reason, you're just like, I could engage here and I could join this group, but I don't want to for whatever reason. I just really loved it. And I loved the neighbors kind of, they're gossiping, but it's more implied than we see, you know?
Right.
And that causes them a lot of stress later on and all that.
Yeah, I really liked the setting and like the community vibe of these houses. I thought it felt like it was such a clear establishment of a place and a community and a time and like a familial feeling to the whole building, even.
Well, and it's such a great, the way they set up is perfect, where they're both moving in on the same day.
Yeah.
And they keep mixing stuff up. And like, I absolutely love that. Like, what a great idea for just kind of beginning a formation between these two people, like a bond forming there.
Yeah. And like already teasing like the intermingling.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I will say, Perk, I have one critique of this movie.
All right.
I do not like the orchestral montage music.
Oh, I disagree.
That was used, you know, over and over again. Maybe it's because we watched Chongqing before this, where I felt like every song that was used was like also in the movie. I forgot the term for that, but
diegetic.
Yeah, yeah. It sounded like every song that we heard that was used for the score could have been playing on the radio, right?
Yeah.
And it just whenever it came on, I'm like, it just didn't feel like it fit in the world. But then later we get like a song on the radio, and we get that Spanish song, I think, that's used. And I like that way more because that felt like songs they would actually listen to or that would be playing. For whatever reason, the orchestral piece just didn't really – kind of took me out of it a little bit.
That's fair. And I think that's probably a personal thing. Like I liked it a lot, but I think that's just because I personally vibed with it.
Hmm. Yeah, that's the only bad thing I got to say is I didn't love that. But.
Fair enough. We had touched on it earlier, but I like what you said about – not necessarily a ton of exposition.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of breadcrumbs that you can kind of pick up along the way. Like you had mentioned with the buying two handbags for the boss. And one that I particularly loved was when he finds a burnt out cigarette with lipstick on it in his apartment. And then, but that's before we know that she had been there, and it's like, oh, what the? It's our boy Tony just likes having his apartments invaded by.
I thought the same thing, dude. He can't help it. Oh man, yeah. I don't know if there was foreshadowing for this. We could have seen it, but I loved the scene when they finally go out to dinner, and he asks her about the handbag. And she asks him about the tie, and then they kind of reveal, like, oh, yeah, my wife has that handbag, and yeah, my husband has that tie. And they kind of put it together. Because I thought their spouses were both cheating, but with just rando third parties. I didn't guess they were going to be cheating with each other.
I didn't initially, but then when Mrs. Chan goes and talks to Mrs. Chow, and she's like, oh, I heard voices. She's like, no, I'm alone. At that point, I was like, And then I agree. I really liked the scene where they both kind of sussed out that each other knew about their cheating spouses.
Right. But then once that's established, you know, you wonder, okay, so what's going to happen now? Because you have a lot of options, right? You could try to get revenge. You could get revenge in multiple ways. You could try to expose them. This is not like a unique movie plot. Like, I feel like this has been done a few times. Mm-hmm. But I loved that. They try to like reenact it and be like, okay, how did this happen? And sometimes you're not sure, like, are they reenacting or are they actually flirting? And be like, it's really clever. And I like, again, there's no exposition really. So it's like, you kind of got to figure it out and like interpret for yourself, like what's really going on here.
In particular, the first time that they kind of double back, mm-hmm. I like the scene where they're walking on the street and like at first he asks her out and then she's like, no, that's not how it would have happened.
Yeah, my husband wouldn't say that. Like, yeah.
And then they run back the exact same scene, mm-hmm. and she makes the first move. And I thought it was really cool how they kind of almost rebuilt the story together.
Yeah, yeah, it was awesome. And they just kept doing that throughout the movie. And then, like I said, I mentioned the rehearsal scene earlier where she tries to confront him. And also when Tony decides to leave and then she breaks down there, like, yeah, it's good, man. This is a fucking good movie.
And then another thing I'd like to touch on, a big emphasis for me. I love the ending. I like the little passage of time. They have spiced in there a little news footage too that kind of gave me some almost Spike Lee vibes. Briefly. Do you know which part I'm talking about? They just put in some news footage and stuff.
There's like, it was on the radio, right? Oh, no, no, it was up. Yeah.
At the very end.
Yep, you're right.
And I liked all that. And I liked the, you know, just barely not crossing paths. And she came to Singapore, and then she, you know, he answers the phone and she can't say hello. But in particular, the setup for the whispering into trees,
mm-hmm.
and then him at the
it's Cambodia, I think.
Yeah, he's at a Cambodian like mausoleum,
mm-hmm.
or something where he buries that secret. That scene is so beautiful, and I love it. And I love that it then goes on to, you know, we see him walking away, and then we just get a few more stills of, like, this ancient, long-dead building. And and then the absolute gut punch that is the title card that plays after it cuts to black. I don't remember the words off the top of my head, but that last statement that he puts on screen, it's a gut punch.
There's one in the beginning, and one in the middle, and then one at the end. And I really liked all those.
I think maybe it also helps that just Asian languages are a lot more poetic.
Yeah.
I just loved the ending a lot. I think it was super powerful, and the setup earlier on in the movie, not too early on, but the setup and the payoff is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's just a great encapsulation of that feeling of, like, you have with people sometimes where it's like, this is a moment and it works in the moment. Once you're out of it, then it doesn't really work anymore, you know? And kind of once that time for them was over, then there's no really going back to it. And I think maybe that's what the final quote was saying, something along those lines of, like, you can't go back. And like, reminded me of, like, when I studied abroad and, like, you know, meet friends over there and you're, like, best friends. But if you were to meet again, like, outside of that context, it's not really the same, you know?
Right.
Or you can be, like, college and stuff like that, where it's just, like, when you're all together in the same environment or whatever, it works. But you take out a piece and then it just doesn't really work. And that was kind of the feeling I got. And it was just, it's very sad, but it's not hopeless, I guess. Like, right. I don't know, like, he at least was still able to get some independence and do what he wanted to do. She, unfortunately, seems like what wasn't the case, but
well, it's implied that she's no longer with her husband.
That's true. It's like her and her child.
Yeah, because the neighbor says a woman and her child.
Right, right. That's a good point. Yeah. And, like, it's so hard when he walks back past the door and he stops, but he doesn't knock. And
it's just another one of those moments where it's like, just knock, just knock. Yeah. Bring the doorbell, come on.
Yeah, yeah. Man, yeah, this is a great, great movie. And, yeah, like I said, Wong Kar-wai, I'm looking out for you now, my dude.
Well, he's got a whole heap of movies. Another little fun fact is Mr. Chow stays in a hotel room numbered 2046, which is a title of a movie that Wong Kar-wai went on to make, which also stars our boy Tony.
So he had mentioned in the GQ interview that, like, 2046 is, like, kind of like a sequel to this movie.
It would make sense, I guess.
I'm not really sure how. I didn't really understand what was, because he's, I don't know.
Maybe, but just, maybe, like, we get to watch that sometime.
Spiritual successor, something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would highly recommend this movie. Like, it's definitely, like, not, like, you're not going to feel great, I guess, after watching it, but it's still a very beautiful story and very human.
It's a great love story, but there's a whole lot of depth at it, and there's a lot to pick at. It's not just boy meets girl, they fall in love, the end. Like, there's a lot of depth to it, and lots of just really powerful emotion.
Yeah. Well, like, I'm pretty sure they don't even, like, kiss or hook up or anything.
Nope. Which is a choice that I wish... what's her name? Damn it.
Thinking.
I'm working on it.
What movie are you thinking of?
Lost in Translation. Sofia Coppola.
Oh.
It is a choice that I wish she had made. I wish they didn't have that awkward kiss at the end.
Well, it sounds like it wasn't her choice. It was Bill Murray's choice, but then she, like, kept it in.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, I agree. That definitely, that, like, almost ruined that whole movie for me. Because, that was the other thing. It was like, I started the movie, right? And it's, like, pretty PG. I'm like, a movie called In the Mood for Love is PG? But, like, you watch it, like, it makes sense. It's, like, super adult themes and stuff. Or, like, not in a way of, like, it's children couldn't hear it. The children have no idea what the hell was going on. But it just proves, like, you don't need sex or, like, crazy stuff to have, like, a really heart-wrenching love story, you know? It's really impressive.
And a quick aside before we wrap up, I want a giant thermos that I can always have noodles in.
Yes, dude. Honestly. Go on the noodle stand, fill it up.
Yeah, you could just go somewhere and they just give you noodles. Like, obviously there's money exchange, but
Hey,
those are some big thermoses, you know what? I'd eat off those noodles for days.
I do have a recommendation.
I thought of okay. at least something vaguely similar. So
mine is a movie called Drinking Buddies, which I watched a few years ago. It stars Jake Johnson and Olivia Wilde, and kind of has a similar plot where you have two sets of couples, and it's like, well, who's really supposed to be with who, kind of a thing. And it's, again, like, it's not like the happiest movie, but it's very enjoyable. Like, the actors are enjoyable, and I think like the whole movie was pretty much improv'd, which normally is like a red flag for me, but I think it played out really well, and like the conversations felt more natural. And I remember liking it quite a bit, so I'd recommend Drinking Buddies if you want to take a chance at something.
Fair enough. The one that I came up with is, I was trying to think of the reminder of like an unrequited, you know, just ships in the night just passing by. Mm-hmm. And I think it reminds me of the ending of La La Land, where the two romantic leads don't end up together in the long run. And you get the beautiful, sad moment of closure when she comes back to the jazz club. And
yeah.
That's kind of a similar vibe, although I wouldn't recommend that movie for the reasons that I like this movie. Just the ending reminded me of that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I love the ending of La La Land. It's like the best part of the movie is the ending.
I love that whole movie.
It's great.
Sorry, Luke Peterson, but I love that movie.
There's a lot of haters of La La Land, and I don't get it. Like, movie's great, but anyway. Well, that is our review of In the Mood for Love. Definitely check it out if you have not seen it. But it's time to get in some bonus reviews. And Perk, let's get into it. All right. I want to talk about it. You start off with the prelude.
So in the last couple weeks since we last talked, I've watched all four of the John Wicks.
Hell
because
yeah.
Because the first three are on Peacock with ads. But because they have ads, that means everyone can watch it. So so I, you know, in getting hyped to see the new John Wick, I wanted to catch up on the franchise because it had been a while since I I hadn't seen any of them since I watched the third one in theaters. Maybe the best action franchise, pure action at least. It's Mission Impossible.
That Mission Impossible, yeah. It's hard. It's hard to measure.
I'll be brief on the first three. I love the original. I love the simplicity of it. I love the way that the second dips into the pond of the underworld and the structure behind everything. The third one, I think, is, you know, the weakest of the bunch. Mainly because you're not supposed to like the villains, but I specifically didn't like the villain just because the actress kind of just got on my
nerves. She's not that intimidating. No. I agree. I three is my least favorite, I think.
And I think it does a little too much. I think there are just a few too many threads going on, which is funny to say because there's even more going on in four, but I thought it worked. I don't know if it's four and two are close for me. I think the first one's still my favorite, but I think four probably is my favorite of all the sequels. It's just super cool. It's just so much fun to watch.
Fun, dude.
Yeah, it is. All the set pieces are great and ridiculous and awesome. Donnie Yen as Kane, the blind swordsman, is awesome.
Fucking awesome.
Supposedly,
yeah.
Donnie Yen's not the coolest guy, political wise.
No, that's unfortunate.
Big pro China guy, but whatever. In movies, he's awesome, so who cares? I will say, I think, like, obviously you suspend your disbelief, right? Like, I'm not out here crying because John Wick didn't reload every 21 bullets. I don't care. But I can't help but look at the blind swordsman and say, couldn't he just be hard countered by 40 feet and a gun? just, like, out of earshot. scoped rifle, and that's it for old Kane. But the set pieces that they're in together are so much fun. Just if you just walk through this movie in terms of just set pieces, it's so cool. It's just a string of amazing set pieces. Like, yeah, the card table fight is great because then it devolves into, like, for the 11th or 12th time, we're at some ancient building that also happens to be a rave nightclub. And it's like pouring rain or waterfalls or something. And John Wick and this giant man have this like WWE fight.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. You got the Arc de Triomphe where they're having a fight, about a 20-minute long fight in a giant roundabout where traffic seems unbothered up until the fighting's done, which I think is so funny. People are just getting hit by cars as if
here's
these
the thing,
cars
Kirk.
Don't hear gunshots and like turn around.
We established in John Wick 3 that everyone on the planet is an assassin, all right? So everybody knows, you know, they're trying to get on the action.
That was another thing too. Like they've done this in every movie, but the fights in a nightclub, like
there's still people.
John
still
Wick's
dancing.
Just killing people with tomahawks, and everyone's like, "Yeah, woo!" Maybe they're just too far off the drugs. Don't realize people are just dying. And then, in particular, like the thing with this franchise, man, is you're like, surely they can't keep getting bigger and better. The stair fight scene, it's like the best fight scene ever.
Well, so, yeah, and I don't want to spoil too much. People haven't seen it yet, but like...
I'm being kind of vague about it.
But. Yeah. So, for me, my ranking, 3, I agree. The villain isn't that great for me, and I think it's a little bit too long in some parts. Then, 1 and 2 are close. I think 2 over 1, just because I really love the action in 2. 4, my number 1. I absolutely love this movie. This is the most fun I've had in a movie theater in who knows how long. Like, I was laughing or smiling or my jaw was just on the floor for this entire film. Like, I feel like John Wick 3 was the first one where the violence sometimes was so brutal it was funny. Like, you'd laugh at certain things. And this movie, like, just cranked up in the comedy, but, like, turned back the brutalness a little bit. And, like, it was just a perfect balance. Like, again, I'm gonna spoil, but, like, the stair fight scene. The first half of it, I'm like, this is all right. And then the thing happens. And the second half, I'm like, this is fucking awesome, right? And yeah, like they just everything was just cranked up to 11. And, you know, going into the movie, it's like, okay, it's almost 3 hours long. I'm like, all right, is it worth it? And it was. And it was mostly the set pieces, which I loved, but there was some like quieter moments that like I actually appreciated quite a bit. With just like Ian McShane or, you know, just other side characters. Also thought Skarsgård was an incredible villain. My favorite villain of the series. Like, he was like legit intimidating and legit like smart and like crafty and stuff.
And he just has like just the perfect disposition to be a bad guy.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
He's just got like the perfect face of a villain. Like, he's literally it, you know?
Exactly.
It's perfect.
And yeah, like you said, like the action, the set pieces just keep getting wilder and wilder. And like, the Arc de Triomphe scene is in the trailer, or part of it is the trailer, because like you said, it's a very long action scene. And like, that was the scene in the trailer that I was like, okay, I'm back, I'm hyped again. Like, because I was kind of losing hype for this movie. I saw that in the trailer, I'm like, okay, I'm hyped again. So that scene happens. I'm like, that was fucking awesome.
And that's like the fifth best set piece in the movie.
What? So I'm like, that was fucking awesome. That's going to be my favorite one in the movie by far, right? And then, and again, I don't want to spoil for people, we get the Hotline Miami scene, right?
The Hotline Miami
and
scene.
I seriously, Perk, my jaw was open the entire time. Like, it just kept going. I'm like, this is the most creative thing I've ever seen in an action movie. Like,
I don't think
I've
ever seen
it like
in a movie before.
Yeah, no, it was like, and it just kept going. And it was fucking incredible. Like, if somebody walked into the movie, just saw that scene and walked out, worth the price.
They got their money's worth, yeah.
They got their money's
worth.
Like,
$15
seriously. Long. I might go see it again just to see that one scene again. Like, that's how fucking incredible it was. So, like, this movie just elevated the action even higher than I thought was possible. And, like, it's making me wonder, I'm like, is this better than Mission Impossible? Because, like, I love the Mission Impossible series, but, man, like, this movie, like, the one thing Mission Impossible has over John Wick is, like, kind of plot and characters. Because Keanu is Keanu, but that's also what makes it so fun. is like,
he has like six lines of dialogue in the whole movie.
He has, but like, he's great 40 at delivering words. Those. It's hilarious because somebody will say something, he'll just go, and then he goes and kills a bunch of people. Like, yeah, this is fucking awesome. So it just, and like the new characters are really cool. Like Mr. Nobody was freaking fascinating. Which I'm pretty sure he's getting a spinoff. Donnie, you mentioned Akira. So like, it's, man, dude. I had so much fun in this movie, and like, it's my number one with a bullet.
Yeah, I had I was unfamiliar with Shamir Anderson, who plays Mr. Nobody. I thought he was fantastic.
He was great.
I thought his character was super interesting. It almost seems like his character was put in because they had a lot of fun with the dogs in number three. They're like, we gotta find a way to get like another German Shepherd into this.
We know another dog guy for sure.
Yep. And I think his plot line is great. His motivation is cool. I think at the table where at the poker table, which as I mentioned is a great scene, where the goon is like, one thinks he can buy his way out, one thinks he can kill his way out. And I forget what he asked.
I forget the last one,
For Kane. But I think that the side characters are really fantastic in this movie.
And there's not like a lot of exposition. Like with Mr. Nobody in particular, you got to figure that out kind of on your own. Like there are clues and like he's got his notebook and stuff. But they don't really come out and tell you what he's doing. You just kind of put it together, you know?
I did think it was a little weird the way that we left, was her name Akira? When she gets off the train, I for sure thought she was coming back in some capacity.
Minor spoilers, did you see the post-credit scene?
No, I didn't know there was one. We need to stop doing that. All right.
And then also shout out to Clancy Brown, who's in this movie.
Yeah.
He's great.
Isn't he Mr. Krabs?
He is Mr. Krabs, and he's in a ton of stuff.
He's awesome as the Harbinger. They just keep coming up with weird names.
Badass. I mean, because like, okay, in three it was the Adjudicator. I'm like, that's pretty badass. And unfortunately, I don't feel like that actor lives up to that name. But the Harbinger, like Clancy Brown. And also
the Marquis, which is just
Marquis.
A perfect title for like someone who lives in a palatial mansion. And
then also the woman who plays John Wick's like kind of sister was great too.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
I'm going to give her a name.
Smaller role, but...
Smaller role, but she had good good line delivery. I'm not sure I'm going to find it fast enough, but... this movie just drips cool. Like, again, I'll say this without trying to spoil it, but, like, just the radio shtick.
Yeah.
It's just awesome. It's just, like, what's the coolest thing we can do? And then they do it. And normally, I think that's annoying. Like, I don't like when stuff does that, but when it's John Wick, it's like, yeah, do the coolest thing you possibly can.
Her name is
Natalia Tenya.
Okay. Another aside just from this whole series, but the bit where everything is controlled on like a stock market floor, but the only people working at this stock market floor are just women with sleeve tattoos. It's just like it's awesome. It's stupid and cool, and it's like I don't need to worry about why. It's just awesome.
Yeah. It's so fun. Like, which is like a weird thing to say about a movie that's so violent, but like, again, they just like have the balance. Like, it's so unique that only John Wick can kind of do. I just like, I can't recommend it enough. Like, if you're seeing any of these movies, or maybe honestly, you might walk in the movie with no background. Because they don't really hang on what happened in the old movies. Like, you can kind of jump in and have fun.
Yeah, I mean, the whole, like, the backing for John Wick has pretty much always been legend. So the first three movies might as well just be legend.
Right.
The villains usually don't carry over from movie to movie. So there's enough distinction that you can watch them all in their own context.
Right.
But if you said that potentially there's a Mr. Nobody spinoff coming, apparently there's also a continental like series
TV show. Well. Yeah. It's been in the works for a while. I'm not sure if anything will actually happen, but you know.
I mean, I heard in an interview that they've recorded three episodes.
Okay, that's good.
Filmed three episodes. So
yeah,
hopefully that'd be fun.
I'm down for it.
But what we need to not do is make a Wickiverse.
No, they're going to try.
We got to stop just... Well, yeah, because what else does Lionsgate have? We got to stop bashing IPs into the ground.
One other thing I want to make sure I mention because I forgot. So I double-checked. So this movie, same director and same DP as the previous movies. But I feel like the cinematography of this movie is on such another level compared to the previous three. I think like it is so much like higher quality, more gorgeous. There's some really beautiful shots. Like, I just think they really upped their game on the cinematography in this one.
It is a technological step up. I believe they were able to shoot on IMAX cameras for the first time. I think that was the case, which is, I'm glad they start out with a very picturesque, like, top-down shot of the desert.
Yeah.
And we don't have to worry about practicality because John Wick is riding a black horse and wearing a full black suit in the desert. But it looks badass, so mm-hmm. who cares? But yeah, just the much larger cinematic shots, I believe, are because they just had an upgrade in technology.
Yeah, I mean, it's dope. Yeah, and I love a lot of the framing. But anyway, Perk, that's John Wick. Give me another bonus review of something you watched this week.
I finished, because it just finished, Shrinking, the first season on Apple TV.
Before you continue, I have watched everything except for the last two or three episodes.
Okay.
So no spoilers.
I won't. But I wouldn't have done it anyway because I think people should watch it. I really, really like this show.
So do I.
I think it's super charming. I hate that I've fallen for a sitcom because that's exactly what I've done. And I preach hate against sitcoms in general. But the characters are all nuanced and creative. They don't feel like characters I've seen before.
Mm-hmm.
They're all portrayed really well. They have cool dynamics, interesting plot lines, just the chemistry between all the characters is fantastic. Harrison Ford looks like he's having a lot of fun.
Dude, Harrison Ford is so fucking funny in this show.
He's really funny.
He is hilarious. Like, I would never have expected him to be this funny.
He's like acting curmudgeonly, but like with a sweetheart.
Mm-hmm.
And Jason Segel's terrific. And all the peripheral characters are great too. I can't really say all too much about the show without spoiling stuff in it, but it's really good. And I would recommend if you have access to Apple TV, I think throw it in the queue. It's not long. It's, 10 episodes. They're like 30 to 40 minutes. And other than a few moments of, tension and conflict, it's just like a really fun watch.
Yeah, I've really, really loved what I've watched so far. I'm excited to have a few episodes left. This show is just perfectly cast. I think every single character is perfectly cast and perfectly acted. And they all, the interplay between all of them, there's way more interconnections than I would have expected.
It's an actual web, right? It's not just, it's not a line of characters. It's
it's not just the main character with everyone. It's like they all have their own stuff. It's similar to Ted Lasso, where like it perfectly balances the comedy and the drama, and it's the same writers, right? So it's to be expected.
Yeah.
But I think the setting is super unique and fun. But also, they do really dark stuff, and like I think it is handled really well. And I hope it gets some flowers. I think it is like very, very, very well written. And honestly, I think it's better written than Ted Lasso, personally. I really, really enjoying it. Yeah, I'm very excited to finish it, but I would highly recommend it to pretty much anybody. I think it's a great time. Speaking of Ted Lasso, are you watching season 3?
Yeah, I've caught up on the first two episodes. I'm not sold yet. We'll have to see. We'll see where it goes. But
yeah, I'm enjoying it. It hasn't done anything crazy yet. I'm confident they can land the plane.
Yeah, it just maintains the same charm. Like, it's just fun to watch Ted Lasso, so... They've made a couple decisions where I'm like, no, I knew you were going to do that. I didn't want you to do it. But I think there's potential resolution for a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And my biggest thing so far is just like from the trailer, it looks like Ted's going to give Nate the kill him with kindness, which is like perfect.
Perfect, yeah.
That's exactly what he would do. I'm glad that that's what he's going to do. That's what he should do. So,
mm-hmm.
And we'll see how it goes from there.
Yeah. No, I'm liking it too. I think the interesting thing between watching Ted Lasso and Shrinking at the same time is I'm enjoying Shrinking a little bit more just because I feel like specifically Ted's jokes are so foreshadowed or so signaled, right? Like you can tell when he's winding up for like a big joke and then a payoff,
this
right?
This is going to be a joke.
And Shrinking is like, it comes out of nowhere sometimes. It just really hits you and it's a little bit sharper.
That's fair.
So I still love Ted Lasso. I love his character, but sometimes I'm like, all right, I understand we're doing a whole thing to get to a thing and it's fine. But
yeah, I not to call it anywhere near Family Guy, but it does have kind of that almost cutaway type humor sometimes where it'll be like,
yeah,
oh, this is like that time in Kansas, you know?
Right. Yeah. No, yeah, you're not wrong there. You're not wrong. I think it's a good analogy.
Which is still funny. So, but yeah, a different kind of funny.
Yeah, exactly.
A little bit more telegraphed, as you were saying.
Give me your other bonus review.
Do you not have one?
Well, mine was Ted Lasso / Shrinking was one of mine. Oh, and I have a little block at the end. So
Okay. So mixing it up. Got a little game review for you this week.
Oh.
Yeah.
This is a movie podcast, Burke. What are you doing?
I know. But it's cinematic games or whatever. I don't know. Whatever. It's my podcast. I'll talk about what I want.
All right.
So a few years ago, because Epic Games on their launcher, they were giving away free games. And I picked up Abzu, which is a underwater, pretty much swimming sim with some super light puzzling and just really beautiful scenery and a beautiful world to swim through and explore, which is a kind of a successor to the game Journey, which I have not played.
Is it the same developer?
It's not the same developer. It's the same art designer and music director.
Okay.
And I know some people had problems with Abzu because it borrows a lot from Journey, just in a very different setting. And I think that's super okay. I wish there was a Journey type game for every scenario.
Like every biome.
Make one on the moon. I'll play it. I did a combo. I played, it's that game company is the maker of Journey.
Yep.
And before that, they made a game called Flower.
Yep.
Which is a similar game. So in Flower, you like start off as a petal and you blow to a nearby flower and a petal pops off that one as it blooms. And you end up with this like cloud of flower petals blowing through the wind. And it's sweet and it has a good message about the environment. The controls kind of suck. And it's a tough one for anyone OCD because if I missed a flower, I'm going back.
Like, yeah, yeah.
It'll kill me. Cause
the game's like, relax. And you're like, I'll relax if I can get all the flowers.
No, I need to get all the flowers. I even played through the whole credit sequence because the credit sequence is going flower to flower with credits. They got me. They made me play the whole credit sequence. So yeah, Flower is good. I maybe pick it up on sale for a couple bucks, but Journey is amazing. It is a desert-based, very light puzzling exploration game with a bunch of like old ancient-looking architecture and cool environments to interact with. You're this little like robed character. And as you go along the way, you run into, like, I named them the napkins and the carpets. but there are little NPC, almost like animals, but not animals. Like, they're like floating little sheets of paper almost. And if you bring them around you and they swirl around you, they give you a little bit of flight power. And as you unlock more and more like hieroglyphics throughout the game, you get a longer and longer tail and you can fly more and more. All these like paper-based characters are really beautiful and all the environments are very cool. Nothing is too difficult, which I really appreciated. Both of these games have no dialogue. no words at all, but they have coherent stories that you follow as you just explore the world. Abzu is similar. I believe Abzu has information on like aquatic life that you can pop up. But and then the biggest shocker about Journey for me was I was just like wandering around doing my typical, I have to find everything in this area. And then all of a sudden there was just another guy. There was just someone else there. Turns out this game is co-op. It's online co-op. And like, I was like, is this just like a computer trying to help me because I've been here for too long? No, they're actual characters. At the end of the game, at the end of the credits, it shows you players that you played with. And I played with two different actual Steam users.
Yeah.
Which is so cool. And I'm like, because I did determine that they weren't bots because they weren't very helpful. I was like, oh, this is just a guy because they're not actually contributing anything. But I thought that was just such a cool touch because I didn't even know. I thought it was just a single player game. And then all of a sudden there's just, there's another of these like robed characters running around. And when they're gone, you're like, oh, where'd they go? And it's like almost like a meditation on loneliness. Like, yeah, damn.
That's the twist of Journey, right? And unfortunately, the reason I haven't played it is because I know the twist. So I'm like, is it still worth it for me to play it? It probably still is.
It definitely is. I mean, it's very minor. The just running into someone else. I am impressed, though, on this game that was made like over 10 years ago. There's still enough people that they can just match me with someone. Because someone has to be in the same area as me at the same time as me. And at any given time, there are like 70 people playing this game worldwide.
Yeah.
So
it's cool, man. It's cool.
Yes. It was really awesome. I super recommend it. Both of these games, I played them both in one day because they take about 2 hours each. Just awesome experiences. And I'm really glad I finally got around to playing them.
Oh yeah.
Hoping to get into a little more single player games. I haven't dove deep in them in a little too long, I think.
Okay. I got a recommendation for you after we end here.
All right.
Because I know you like Superliminal. And there's a new game coming out that I think you're going to like. But anyway.
Yeah.
All right. To end things out here, I got an anime rock block for you, Perk.
All right.
I tried three anime and I fell off of two of them.
Okay.
So every season I try to like look at what came out and like, is there anything here I'm interested in, you know? And sometimes I'll just like read summaries. Sometimes I'll watch a YouTube video kind of summarizing each kind of one, you know? And this season was pretty weak. Not a lot going on. But I watched a YouTube video from a creator that does recaps. And there was two that he mentioned. I'm like, okay, I might check these out. First one was called The Fire Hunter. This one starts because the art style is really beautiful. It's very... So it's based on a novel or a series of novels. So I wonder if there's illustrations in the novels. But it had kind of a storybook feel to it. And just it was very striking art style. So I'm like, okay, I'll check this out. And like... The premise is kind of interesting. It's the premise is like humanity died and then they kind of came back like a different version of humanity, like re-evolved. And this version, if you get too close to fire, you just spontaneously combust. So fire has to be like stored very carefully and, you know, I guess people can die really easily from it. And the only way to get it is to like hunt these beasts that have like fire blood. All that kind of shit. And basically the main character is a little girl that somehow was in the woods and a fire hunter came and had to protect her. And because he had to protect her, he died. So she has to bring his stuff kind of back to the capital, like his sickle and his dog. So she ends up getting on this train and heading back to the capital, trying to return his things, and things happen along the way. So episode one, I got through. I'm like, okay, this is interesting. I like their style. World seems kind of cool. Episode 2 comes and there was an action scene and animation was rough.
Oh, really?
It was really rough. And I don't know if it was due to lack of experience or lack of time, but it was not good. And I was like, man, I don't know if I'm not to be too snobby, but like, you know, I don't know if I want to watch more of this if the animation's going to be this kind of rough. And I don't really care about a lot of the characters at this point. And the world's like, I'm not a huge fan of just like post-apocalyptic stuff in general. So I'm just like, eh. That was kind of the last nail in the coffin of like, at the very least, I like the art, but if the animation's going to be bad, then I'm not going to keep watching it. So
that's too bad, because that sounds like a very interesting premise.
Yeah, and it might still be worth it. I mean, like, you check out the trailer and see if it looks interesting. I just, the action was it was really bad. So that's a Fire Hunter. And then next one I tried out was this one called Revenger. This one is set in like feudal Japan around like when opioids start coming into the country. So it's kind of some political stuff around that, which is kind of interesting. But main character is like a samurai who works for a government. I'm not familiar with all of, like the politics and stuff. And basically he gets sent to kill somebody, and it turns out to be like his wife's or his fiance's dad. But because he was told to by his boss or by the head of the government, he does it, and turns out he was like tricked, and then he's like, I gotta get revenge with her. And Perk, do you remember the show Leverage back in the day?
Never watched it.
Are you familiar with it at all?
Not especially.
Okay. Leverage was a sitcom that I really liked, and the premise of that show was you had like a group of like, you had a hacker, you got a thief, you got a grifter, right? This group of people that would help, like Robin Hood kind of stuff, right? Where a person gets fucked over by a company, and like we provide leverage, and they help kind of get revenge on the. That's what anime is, all right? Because the samurai meets up with this group of other warriors, and they get revenge for people getting fucked over by the government or by other people. So every episode, so he gets revenge in like episode one, and then every episode after that is like the group getting revenge for different people, and it's kind of monster of the week kind of a thing. Which is fine. Like, I don't know. This anime is fine. There's nothing unique about it. There's not really a overarching plot. Because like I said, the first character, main character gets resolved in episode one.
That's troublesome. You can't resolve your main conflict in the first episode.
I will say, episode one as like a single story is great. Like, I would say watch episode one then stop. Like, it's a great little story. But it's just like, I don't know. It's comfort food, and like you know exactly what it's gonna be, and like the animation art is like good enough, and the characters are fun enough. But like all of them, there's five people on the team, and they all have like a finishing move that's like their kill move, and it's the same one every episode. So it's like, okay, I can only get hype up this move one or two times before every time I see it, it's like, okay, it's the same thing again. Yeah. Like one dude, he kills people by, he has like a gold film, and he puts it over their face, and they suffocate. And it's like the first time you see it, it's like, oh yeah, it's pretty cool. The fourth time I see it, I'm like, okay.
Oh, he's going for the film again.
we get a level up or a new. So it's like, I don't know. So I dropped that one too, because I'm just like, there's nothing super like bad. It's just nothing unique or special about this that's keeping me going. The third one I started, I'm actually going to stick with. So this one came out. This is not from the season. It came out last year. I think the same season as Odd Taxi, if I remember right.
Okay.
So this one's called Sunny Boy. And this is not based on a manga or a novelization. This is a pure anime, like original anime. And I'm only a few episodes in, but it is fascinating. It is. I'm going to look up the IMDb, what they have for the premise, because it's very hard to explain. But as far as like other shows it reminds me of, it's giving me Lost vibes. It's giving me Inception vibes. It's giving me like Lord of the Flies. So here's what IMDb says. A group of students on summer vacation find themselves transported to another dimension and granted superpowers to survive there. So basically, like, there's like 36 kids in the high school, and all of a sudden, they're in a different dimension. And slowly, each of them kind of gets superpowers of all different kinds of superpowers. And it starts off as, like, kind of, like I said, like Lord of the Flies. And then at the end of episode one, something happens, and then it kind of just kind of evolves over time of eventually episode them trying to get back to their kind of home dimension. But, like, no exposition, very like psychedelic and kind of psychological mystery. I'm gonna say like psychological thriller, I suppose, looking for. It definitely does not hold your hand. There's a lot of like quick shots of like, hey, look at this thing and it's gone. Almost like kind of subliminal stuff. This show is what I feel like I wanted Paranoia Agent to be. Which is that show I watched a while ago, which was by Satoshi Kon, who was like a psychological thriller guy. And it was about like a string of murders in a city. And it was fine. This is what I kind of wanted, of more supernatural but there's still like interplay between the kids and it's with superpowers. I don't know. I'm only a few episodes in, so it's very hard to explain. But like, I would definitely recommend checking it out because it's very weird, but very, very cool. And the art style, I think, is really like unique and interesting. So, yeah, I'll be sticking with Sunny Boy, and I'm going to finish that, and we'll see how I like it at the end. Hopefully it has a good ending, because I think it's going to be like a one season kind of deal. But yeah, that's my anime update.
Nice.
For this episode. All right, so that is our episode for this week. Thank you always all for watching. Next week, we're going to be watching our first Marvel movie on the pod. I wasn't sure we were ever going to watch one. But Perk has not seen this one, and I'm very excited to watch it again. So we're going to watch Shang-Chi
I need more Tony.
I didn't even realize, but Tony plays the villain in Shang-Chi, which is great. So Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings on Disney Plus for next week. I imagine a lot of people listening to the show have seen it already, but I think it'll be fun to rewatch because, in my opinion, it's probably my favorite, besides Spider-Man, my favorite like post-Endgame Marvel movie. But I don't want to hype it up too much for you, Perk. But
I'm not going to say that's high praise, but putting it in the conversation with the new Spider-Man is definitely high enough.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So yeah, next week, Shang-Chi and the Legend of Ten Rings on Disney+. But until then, thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye-bye.